Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
When it comes to your finances, you think you've done it all. You've saved, you've researched, and you've invested all that you can. Now it's time to take those investments to the next level by using the brand behind every great investor, Yahoo Finance. As America's number one finance destination, Yahoo Finance has everything you need, whether you're a seasoned trader or just dipping your toes into the market. Join the millions of investors who trust Yahoo Finance to guide them on their financial journey. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit yahoofinance.com. The number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com.
Hello, this is Eat, Sleep, Work, Repeat. I'm Bruce Daisley. It's a podcast about our jobs and how we can get more from them. I hope you're well. I hope you had a good Christmas break. Did you get COVID? I think I might have got COVID, but in a sort of very low-key, slightly scratchy throat kind of way. Certainly didn't seem bad. I had to travel. I went to Lebanon over the break. And the challenge of sort of being COVID-free before and after flights was the main stress. But like, very fortunate, I'm massively vaccinated. So very fortunate that science and technology has proved such a gift to us. Anyway, I hope you're well. Now, one thing that a lot of people are reflecting on right now is just their relationship with their job. There's one headline that I saw a couple of days ago that said that 75% of people are reflecting on whether they should be considering changing jobs. And it's clearly in the way that our relationship with our workplaces has changed and therefore our jobs have changed, a lot of people are wondering what do they need from a job and what do they want from a job. As we spend most of our waking hours doing our jobs, it's an important consideration, not least when it comes to our own happiness, fulfillment and welfare, really. So I was really intrigued. I wanted to understand, firstly, why people are having these discussions. Secondly, if you are interested in yourself, how could you seek about navigating these choices and navigating this complexity? The people to talk to were obvious. Former guests Helen Tupper and Sarah Ellis are best-selling writers. They've had a phenomenally successful TED Talk about how we can reflect on our relationship with our jobs. And really, they were the first people I wanted to talk to. So after successful careers in marketing, both of them have gone on now to run an organization, Amazing If. And they've had one best-selling book and they've got another book coming out this week, which I think their insight will be incredibly helpful for you. They really are sort of intrigued with how they can provide practical advice and really coaching for anyone who's reflecting on work. So I think this is a really timely discussion, most definitely because of all the consideration that our jobs have got right now. This is probably something that even if you weren't necessarily considering changing jobs, it would arm you with the questions that you should be thinking about. Really great discussion. The authors of the forthcoming book, You Coach You, this is Helen Tupper and Sarah Ellis. Great to have you back here. I wonder just to kick off, if you could introduce who you are and what you do.
You go first, Sarah.
Okay. Hi, I'm Sarah Ellis, and along with Helen, who's sitting here by my side, we're the co-founders of a company called Amazing If, where everything we do is about making careers better for everyone.
And that everyone includes individuals, so we try and help people through our books and podcasts and as many tools as we can put out into the world to help people, and then organisations. So a lot of our time is spent with working companies across the world, running different career development programmes for them.
Because you've created this really interesting niche for yourselves, haven't you? Sort of, it strikes me from the outside as, you know, a passion project, actually something that you felt
and interested. I mean, maybe it's worth asking why you started the podcast, but it seems to have developed, and you really seem to be like the, you know, thought leaders in a really particular space. Just remind us why you started your podcast.
I think, do you know what, it's a thing that started before the podcast, I think. So we, Sarah and I have known each other for 20 years. We went to university together. And about 10 years ago, I was working at Virgin. Sarah was at Sainsbury's. And we'd never worked together, but we spotted an opportunity to start something together which could help other people with their career development, because lots of people were coming to us for mentoring. We were managing people. And they seemed to have quite similar questions about their career, but they couldn't find the support that they were looking for. And we thought, well, we'll try and help some of these people, but we'll do it together because we like each other, we like learning with each other and from each other, and it just gave us an opportunity to do something outside of our day job. And so that's what started. It wasn't a podcast. It was just, we started to realise that not everybody could come to a session in London on a weeknight, and actually podcasts were starting to be a way of which we could help someone at scale. And so we started the podcast in 2017, just around confidence. We just did a 10 episode series on confidence.
Yeah, 250 episodes, weekly episodes later. Who knew that was what was going to happen? But I think the other thing that was a tipping point for us was probably the first time we drew in a workshop, where we sort of said, careers sort of feel a bit less like this. And we drew this picture of a ladder and steps, and we replaced it and said, for us, they feel more like a squiggle. And we started talking about this idea of squiggly careers, and everyone just nodded. You know, in the room, everyone was like, yeah, that feels more reflective of both my experiences and my aspirations. And until that point, it wasn't like we had this like incredible aha moment or had got any ambitions to start an organization. It was just I think we had found a way of describing increasingly how careers were feeling, and especially over the last 2 years, how careers now feel in terms of career change, developing in different directions, one size fits all for careers. So it was kind of a new way of thinking about careers, but then also trying to make it really relentlessly practical and useful. And maybe that was the bit that people right. have been missing.
Because I've heard other people use the phrase squiggly careers. Have you
yeah,
sort of...
Yeah, we love it.
Which I presume is like, it must borrow derivation from that scribble that either of you did on the... Who have you seen using it? Have you seen other people using it? I've seen like people on news or in, you know, professional media using squiggly careers. That's why it sort of sticks in my head.
Well, we've trademarked it.
Okay.
So squiggly careers is trademarked. But we really like people using it, because I suppose it's showing that the idea is spreading. And we think when an idea spreads and people are sharing it, it goes way beyond us. We're not sort of particularly precious about going, oh, squiggly careers like belongs to us. I think it's what's much more interesting really is then what you do with it. So if we all accept that that's our reality now in terms of our careers, well, what might you do in terms of figuring out what work is really meaningful for you, or what decisions you might make? And I think when you have that squiggly career context in mind, it changes how you think about your career, or certainly changed how I thought about my career. And that's why we started talking about it. But I always love it when we see something pop up on LinkedIn, and in their organisation, perhaps internally, one of their leaders is talking about their careers and they're using the squiggle and they're saying, oh, my career has been squiggly. And often, I would say 99% of the time, people are crediting us, and that's the best moment of my day.
Because
I'm like, brilliant, we've created something that people are sharing.
Because the reason why this is such a timely discussion is that we've seen from the end of last year and right into the start of this year now, we've seen themes about career and I guess what our job, the role our job plays in our lives, have become bigger than ever before. And in fact, you know, through probably October last year, maybe even before, all the companies that I was working with were saying, we're getting so many people resigning and these all manner of things. But one of the themes that seemed to underpin it was a changed relationship between us and our jobs. And I just wondered, because you two have become the experts in terms of, I think, the thinking on this. Why is it that our relationship with our job has changed and the meaning we get from our job to some extent has changed?
I think that pre-pandemic, there was a lot of noise that went around our work. So you had the job that you did and maybe where you did it. And you had a commute and you had some people that you worked in an office with. And there were all these sorts of ingredients to our working experience that resulted in whether we enjoyed or didn't enjoy our job. And as a result of the pandemic, I think the noise on some of those things has got a lot quieter. So I no longer have that office environment with that buzz. I no longer have that person I sat next to for a good chat or whoever I went to lunch with. I just have me mainly in my house doing my job in front of a laptop. And I think when the noise is dialed down on all those other aspects of your work and what you're left with is quite loud, which is the work that I'm doing on my own in a room, I think you start to really question, is this the work that I want to be doing? Because it's much louder, it's much more clear. And I also probably have more choice now, because now I can work this way with lots of different companies. Maybe I don't just have to do this job for that company in that place. Maybe there are other places that I can go to. And I think it also becomes quite self-fulfilling, because you start to see and hear other people having those conversations. And if you weren't already having those thoughts yourself, it would prompt them in you as well.
Yeah, I think the career conversations that people are now having with their managers and their organisations have changed over the past 2 years. And the expectations that individuals have in terms of, well, I want to develop in different directions, and this is what I'm really passionate about, and this is what feels purposeful for me. People are now sort of taking more control of that, which I think that's reassuring. We want individuals to have that power and that ability to have those conversations, because we don't want our relationships with our careers to be passive. We really want people to take ownership and to be thinking about this and then acting, not just thinking, but acting. And I think there is also an element that we shouldn't forget around. There are lots of things outside of people's controls that have affected their careers in the past 2 years. So you might have been in an industry that has been really badly impacted by the pandemic, or your role might not exist in the same way. So some of it, I also think, is some forced squiggliness some of the time. And I also see that when that happens to some people, they realise that they are more adaptable than they gave themselves credit for. They've got more transferable talents than they realised. And I've heard lots of stories from people where, you know, they found themselves in quite vulnerable positions in their careers, but out of that, they've now ended up in a role or in a job or in an organisation that actually feels like a much better fit for them.
Right.
And I think that's a good news story for people from what has been a really hard time.
Yeah, because you hinted at something at the start of that, which is, for a lot of people, revealing to their boss what their career plan is feels like a potentially career-limiting move. And so we're almost in this restrictive zone that some of us might be fortunate to have partners, or that we might have good friends that we could talk to about these things. But in a professional capacity, people who understand the job you actually do, you know, most of our friends and loved ones sort of kind of guess what we do. The people who actually understand what we do, we're locked in a power dynamic with them where sometimes, you know, we would rather a mentor or a coach or someone else was able to provide some guidance and instructions. And I guess, you know, this is why you two have become preeminent at this. But what are the questions then that if someone isn't able to talk candidly to their boss, what are the questions that someone should be reflecting on and saying, okay, these are the things I need to understand?
I think a big bit in this is language, both for the individual and the manager who might be having that career conversation. So instead of what job do you want to do next, or what's the next step for you, both of which are quite ladder-like in terms of their framing, it's much more, what are the possibilities you're curious to learn more about? If I said that to you, that could take you in lots of different directions with that conversation. And I might say, what are possibilities within the organisation? And I would give someone permission to talk to me about possibilities outside of the organisation without making that a bad thing to talk about. Because most people are thinking that anyway. We just have to create a safe space so that they can explore it. Because that the best possibility might not be in this business. But if I know and understand that, I might be able to have them more committed and engaged whilst they are here, because they respect that I'm entering into that discussion with them, rather than them just leaving unannounced without me having had the chance to retain them. But it might be that if I understood more about the opportunities that they were curious about, maybe there is a way that we could craft their role around this in their team at the moment. Or maybe there is another part of the business that they could, we talk about squiggle and stay. Mm. Like, that's the thing we want to really help people to do, is, you know, squiggle and stay within a business. But because they often don't even entertain those conversations, they assume that the answer is leaving, rather than finding a new way to develop in a different direction within the business.
But I do think it's a good point that we don't want our development to be dependent on one person. So you're right about that power dynamic. And I think what you can do as an individual is lessen that power dynamic by not only talking to your manager about your career. I think, and when we say mentors can sound quite formal. And again, I think we miss the point if we think of mentoring as a formal thing. I think, have you got the right career community around you? And have you got a range of different roles that those people are playing who are your supporters and your sponsors? We often talk about it, or your cheerleaders and your champions. And some of those people should be in your organisation. Some of them should definitely be outside of your organisation. And I know you've talked about it before, Bruce, on the podcast. They should be a mixture of your strong and your weak ties, because some of the people that we don't know as well, when we talk to those people about our careers and have curious career conversations, they know people we don't know and they can spot possibilities that we can't see. And so those are the people that sometimes can open up new things that we'd not considered. And those new things could be the opportunity to learn a new skill. It doesn't have to be a new job. And also it doesn't have to be short term. Margaret Heffernan, who I love, she said we need to get so much better at building relationships beyond the ones that we need right now. And one of the things that she observes is that we're all becoming a bit too short-termist in our relationships. And I think that's sometimes true in our networks and our career communities. We sort of think about our manager, because that's the most immediate thing right in front of us. And we're less exploratory and we're less curious and we don't think about possibilities because it sort of feels a bit too far off. And understandably, it doesn't feel like a priority for people. It's not top of their to-do list because they've got so much to get through and they've got so many tasks. But I think if you leave those conversations until that moment that you're unhappy or until that moment that you'd like to make a change, you've left it too late. And so that's the other thing I think we really want to encourage people to do, is open up what career conversations can look like and who they are with. And also knowing that you can do quite a lot of the hard work yourself. You can think about some of these things yourself, so that by the time you have those conversations, they're so useful.
How important is a healthy consideration of career? Because one of the things that we've definitely seen in the course of the last 18 months, specifically I think in the last six, is this rise of people saying, oh, actually I've renegotiated my relationship with work, and now I understand that it was this toxic friendship where it was taking all of my identity, number one, all of my energy, actually it was everything about me, to the extent that, you know, everyone else around me was getting a really dilute version of me. And we've rebalanced that. Is that one of the considerations that people might have when they're thinking about this?
I think so. I think psychologists sometimes call it now enmeshment, where essentially we can't separate ourselves from the work that we do. And that often happens unconsciously. It's not like we choose for that to happen with our work. It's just that it's become such a big part of how we spend our time and our lives. And then because we have almost been forced to press pause over the past couple of years, people have done that renegotiation. And I think now when people are thinking about the work that they do and the time they spend at work, they want that time to be well spent. I always think, at a really practical level, getting to the end of a week, do you feel like your time at work this week has been well spent in quite a binary way? And then where do you think it was best spent? And I think if people are answering no to that question, like, no, I don't feel like I'm investing time in the right areas, I'm not doing work that gives me energy and that I enjoy or that's using my strengths, that's prompting people now, I think, to think, well, what else, or what could that look like, or how might I go into a different area? And for some people that's quite dramatic changes, and they're talked about a lot in terms of career change, you know, people who go from, I don't know, working in the city to becoming a teacher, or people, you know, those really, really big pivots. But it could be just thinking differently about the hours that you work, working a 4-day week. Or it could be about thinking, I'd like to go and explore working in a different team in the organisation. So sometimes those changes are talked about in quite a dramatic way, but sometimes quite incremental change can have quite a big difference.
Makes me think quite a lot about choices, empowering people to make choices, because I think the reason the ladder stuck around for a long time is it gives people a degree of comfort. Like, it's the premise that if I show up and work hard, then I'll go up the ladder and that's the job to be done. The reality is it doesn't really work like that. So it's a bit of a false promise, because the ladders aren't as long as the careers that we're all going to be leading. And at some point you get disillusioned and disappointed, and we're trying to get away from that. But what squiggly career doesn't mean is that you just leave it all to chance. Oh, it's squiggly, so I'm just going to see what
happens.
Hope for the best. Because nobody wants that either. They put a lot of time and effort and energy into their work, and they want to know that it's going somewhere meaningful for them. So I think a lot of this is about, well, you can't have this predictable linear thing that we used to think was the way to do it. And you also can't control a really unpredictable and uncertain future. But what you can do is make better choices. And those choices are based on what's right and meaningful for you. And we talk about having careers as individual as you are. And what we're trying to help people to do is understand what that means. And so a career that is individual for you, Bruce, will be different to me and Sarah, and ours are different to each other's. But giving people like a filter for their future, what are the questions I should be asking? How do I get to that level of awareness? And how do I, you know, scan my career possibilities and make better choices? That's the thing that we can help people with. And that gives them back a bit of control when everything might feel a bit uncertain.
And I think a bit of confidence. So I think that's one of the other things is we still see it takes quite a lot of confidence to opt out of a ladder-like model sometimes, because it's what you think you should do. And maybe it's what other people expect of you. I think it takes quite a lot of confidence and self-belief to move away from the ladder and to start to kind of squiggle in your own direction, because we are influenced by what we think we should do, perhaps what other people before us have done, or perhaps the expectations of other people. And it is hard because we see now more than ever people can't help but compare their careers to other people. You know, we look at our peers and we think, oh, am I as far up the ladder as they are, or they seem to be more senior than I am, and maybe that's based on job titles and those kind of things. So I think there is sometimes the allure of the ladder that still exists in new ways, things like what we see on, you know, the shiny stuff that we see on Instagram or on LinkedIn. And so the thing we're trying to give people the confidence with is, or know what's right for you, and know that will look different at different points in your life. And we talk a bit about work-life fit rather than work-life balance. And again, you could say, well, it's just words, but I think it's trying to encourage people to think about what fit feels right for you at the moment. And that might be working a bit less right now, or it might be working in a different way or in a different type of organisation. But it's giving people the confidence to ask themselves the right questions, doing a bit of coaching for themselves, and then to go and have the conversations to just get a feel for, well, could I do this? What might this look like? What happens if it doesn't work out? I mean, we both went through this exact process when we were leaving, you know, the big corporate organisations that we'd spent, you know, 16, 17 years investing a lot of our lives in, going, are we going to do this? Are we going to go and run a small company, which we had zero experience of? It hadn't really been a plan. It certainly hadn't appeared on any of our career plans. And I think if we had just sort of jumped without really having career conversations, or without asking ourselves some of these kind of open questions, without really considering what work-life fit looked like for us, I think potentially you might have never done it. You know, I could have always found a reason not to do it, and it would have been safer to sort of stay in those big organisations. So I think going through this process, it's not never a one-hit wonder. I think it's more of a, we talk about helping people to have a coaching approach. So not thinking about coaching necessarily as a person. Don't think about it as someone like Helen or I. Think about how can you take a coaching approach to your career, where you're asking yourself really good questions, where you're having really good conversations.
The interesting thing that really strikes me is that it's about sort of dialing up your own understanding of yourself and actually having an opinion. We often find ourselves as a default not necessarily having opinions about what we want to do. We drift, and the things that strike me is that whether it is the curse of comparison leads to unhappiness, but you know we're surrounded with comparison, or whether it's corporate gaslighting, a sort of corporate purpose, pretending that actually you're fulfilling all of your needs because this washing powder is going to change the way that people in the developing world wash their kids' pants, and you know, like you sort of this gaslighting there, it's telling you that this matters when it might not, and. It strikes me that your approach invites and gives people a framework to dial up actually what they understand about what they want. Actually, the questions that we don't ask. And so the interesting thing for me is, how do you invite people to be candid? How do you invite people to push themselves? How can, you know, we all struggle. We were having discussions before about sort of difficult challenges and pushing yourself. And we all struggle. We all talk about it. How do you push people into that zone where they're in a sort of moment of self-revelation?
I think, I mean, our day job is, designing and delivering development programs for people. So I think we have really thought about how we create the space where people have those, potentially quite uncomfortable conversations, and what tools we give them to make it a bit easier. And so if I think about something like confidence, that's one of the hardest things for people to talk about. Confidence, self-belief and progression, probably some of the trickiest things for people to start talking about, because with confidence and self-belief, people feel vulnerable and quite exposed. They've got some limiting beliefs that might be holding them back. And with progression, people feel a bit unsure about talking about what they might really want to do that might be different from what you think I should do. One of the most important things, I think it's practical tools and then a safe space for a conversation. So with both of those, the way that we do it is often we get like a bit of peer-to-peer coaching going on. So we'll get people in a room, or most likely a Zoom at the moment, in like a breakout room, and you get people starting to share some of their stories. So some of the confidence gremlins that might get in their way, or a self-belief setback. So something that's happened to them in the past and maybe what they've learned from it. And we will often start by sharing some of ours to sort of normalise that, so they can hear about our failures or hear about our confidence gremlins. And in a small room where people can hear from each other, they start to realise that they're not alone. They're not the only person who has a fear of not knowing enough, or gets really scared of senior people, or feels like they might fail and therefore they like to play it safe. And once they start sharing some of those stories with each other, they start to go, oh, I'm not the only one that feels like this. And then they come back into the room with us a bit more open to then go, okay, now help me. now I've realised I'm not alone. I realise we all feel like this, and so it's normal, but tell me what I need to do next. Now, we will never say to someone, here's a 1-2-3-step process and you'll be fixed in 30 minutes, because that's, careers aren't easy and working this through takes time. But what we will do is give people kind of frameworks to follow, to try out. We'll give them curious questions to explore, and we'll help them to think through who they might want to have those conversations with. But I think it is that process of, what does self-awareness look like you? Giving yourself the safety to realise that you're not alone, and a structure to follow it through. That's right. Probably, I would say, the ingredients of how we help people.
Right.
And I think when we're trying to encourage people out of their comfort zones into what we call their courage zone, so anything that makes you uncomfortable, exactly like the conversations we were having before we started today, where you feel a bit tense about it, you maybe don't even like saying it out loud, maybe because it's overly ambitious, maybe what you'd like to do is overly ambitious. I remember almost being a bit apologetic about my ambitions early in my career, and really needing someone to give me that permission to be able to say out loud some of the things that I might want to do in my career in the future. And what's really interesting is often that courage zone can feel far away and quite vague and quite abstract, and I think we've got to make it really concrete. So I always really encourage people to write down 3 scary scenarios. So do some scenario planning, but for your career, not for your business. So what are 3 things that would really scare you in the next 12 months? Write those scary scenarios down. Then tell someone about them. There is something about saying them out loud. And tell someone you trust and who you know is on your side and who's going to support you and champion you. Just saying them out loud makes it more real and makes it less scary, funnily enough, just by saying it. And then you've sort of got a bit of an accountability partner in that person who's heard you say those things. And then think about, for each of those scary scenarios, what's one action you could take right now that would get you a bit closer to that scenario? One thing you could say yes to, one person you could go and talk to, someone you could go and ask for help. And I think just by taking this kind of big idea of, oh, we all need to get more comfortable with discomfort, and then breaking it down in that way, which, like we always say, we're a bit relentlessly practical, but that's how I think you then start to make progress. So even at the start of this year, I always get quite nervous doing live radio interviews, because I think, I'm an introvert who likes to prepare, and that's not really live radio, which you never quite know what direction they're going to go in. They won't usually tell you the questions beforehand. So I remember saying to Helen, that's one of my scary scenarios, is on the day having to say yes to like live radio, because sometimes you don't get very much notice. My default there is Helen will do that, because she's better than me, right, on the spot. She's more spontaneous than I am. I'm good for BBC Radio 4 think piece. That's okay. my perfect scenario. Not, do you want to go on the news in 3 hours time? Where, right, I just think I'm too scared. And so even by saying it now and then saying it to Helen, when those opportunities, it's not like we do it all the time, but occasionally when those opportunities come our way, I get a little nudge from Helen saying, maybe you should do this, Sarah. This feels like this is one for you. And then I get a bit of extra support. So knowing that that's a scary scenario, Helen will be like, should we just talk it through for 15 minutes? As if Helen's my manager.
Right.
She sort of is, to be honest. So you know, I'm getting a bit of support from my manager. And then you do it. And yes, it's scary, but it's never as bad as you imagine.
Yeah.
And we have what Farah Storr, who's the editor of Elle at the moment, she talks about, you have these brief moments of discomfort, BMDs. So yeah, it's hard, but it's hard momentarily. And then we get better at it. And each time it becomes that bit easier. And if I think about, then the more you do it, the better you get. When you're doing that scary scenario in 12 months' time, your capability and your confidence is just has grown exponentially from where you started. But I think nothing changes until we are specific about what those scary scenarios are and that we say them out loud and we get the support that we need.
So in the spirit of the, you know, start of the year thinking about these things, and like if we are to believe the statistics, you know, there's still a quarter of the workforce, 30% of the workforce, who are debating changing their jobs this year. So in the spirit of that, and, you know, channeling this idea of I'm going to do something that's scary, what should people be thinking about right now? Should they set themselves a goal to change their jobs this year? Is it just about a micro step? You talked about doing more things in your firm. Mm-hmm. Is it about... I'm just intrigued. What would you advise? And I recognise that there's going to be different next steps for people. So what is the question that someone should be asking themselves?
I think there are... Oh, what's the question? I think there are... what careers am I curious about exploring and who can I explore them with is a useful kind of two-parter question. And if I was going to follow that up with an action, we talk about an exercise called scanning. So when people are exploring their career progression, sometimes people feel like they have to have the perfect job they want to go to. They're like, when I know what the job is, then I'll go and explore. And it gets quite limiting then. So we encourage people to do sort of career scanning. So you use something like LinkedIn Jobs or an alternative, and you take off a lot of the kind of limiters that you normally put onto a job search, like what level, what job title, what salary or status, all that kind of stuff. Take that off, have a very, very wide kind of scan. So I would just put in, you know, I might put in culture worldwide, like, okay, really, really big. And then just the first thing you want to do is just save the jobs that instantly intrigue you. Don't really give it much more of a kind of force filter than that. What instantly intrigues me, and save about like five, ten jobs maximum, and then scan through those jobs in detail and highlight what is it that really energizes me in this job description and what is it that turns me off. You're basically just using job descriptions as data for your development. That's it. And once you do that on quite a few jobs, you start to see, well, what are the things that consistently energize me and what are the things that consistently turn me off? And you are able to create yourself your own kind of career criteria. Okay. So when I do
jobs
it...
Jobs Tinder.
Yeah, exactly like that. Yeah, exactly like that. And you'll end up with like this list of things that's like your career criteria. And so if you were my manager, rather than me saying to you, oh, Bruce, I'd like to find out more about that job, please, what I could say instead is, the jobs that I'm interested in exploring in the future all have elements of collaboration, innovation, and lots of kind of community management. They consistently are engaged by those things. What opportunities do you know, or jobs that might exist that you could connect me to, where I could find out a bit more about that? And so it really helps people to open up their career conversations, because they start from a criteria rather than a job title. And then you go into, well, now I know what areas I'm interested in, who could I go and find out more about?
Interesting. Because one of the complications seems to be when numbers enter any equation. And two ways that numbers enter, either people like, I'm happy to change jobs, but I have to earn as much as I earn now, or worse, I have to earn more. And secondly, I was with someone this weekend and they said, you know, if I was doing it all again, this is what I would do. And this is someone who's 33. Oh, my God. I said, when you're 40, you're going to look back and regret saying that he was all over at 33. But it's so interesting how we either have got these limiting factors. And that's what I'm intrigued to get your perspective on. You know, when's too late to think about these things? And how do we overcome the limiting factor of money?
Never too late, though I would say that.
You would say that. So go on, explain to me why.
But I do think... So I don't think we should ignore the money conversation, because it's a practical one and an important one. I think the key question to ask yourself is, what does enough look like for me right here, right now, in the here and now. Because if you're looking at a job change, you know, you've got rent, you've got mortgage to pay. If you like both of us, you've got massive mortgage, you've got all sorts of childcare costs that cost you a fortune. Like, and you would look at that, and if you said to me now, you've got to change career and you've got to take 40% pay cut, let's use that as an example, because you're going into a completely new area, I'd be like, impossible. Your first limiting belief just goes and you go, well, there's absolutely no way. Now, there probably is absolutely no way to do that next month. But if I was thinking about, well, what do I want to be true in 12 months' time or in 18 months' time that isn't true today? I might want to be much, much closer to that career change than I am right now and start to understand what are the changes or the factors that I need to consider to make that change possible. You know, we did the same working in corporates to running your own business. That's a pretty big change. And the financials of how all that work is very, very different. So I think you need to know what your enoughs are, and you need to know what choices and compromises you are prepared to make in pursuit of that change. Because it might mean that you realise, well, in the very short term, I can't afford to make that change, but I could work out other ways to get closer to that area I'm interested in. So let's say you were thinking, okay, I would actually really like to go and work with a charity or in the more like charitable sector, but I can't afford that because I work in corporate life at the moment and I'm looking at a good 30% pay cut. Usually you get paid less in charities, not always. You might think, okay, well, I can't do that right now, but what I could do is I could think about some volunteering. I could think about some networks that I could join that would get me much closer to that world and give me a window into that world to decide, do I definitely want to go and do that? How can I make sure I get some really good connections so that maybe by the time I move or transfer into that area, I could maybe do it at a level that would help me to be paid as much? One of my friends did make that move, actually, that I'm describing. The way that she worked the financials was to work a four-day week. So she decided her trade-off. We sometimes talk about, like, just be really clear about your trade-offs and your choices and your compromises. You might not like them, but they might be, it's better to know the facts and then you can sort of work with them. And she decided, okay, they can't afford me on a 5-day week, but they could afford me on a 4-day. I can compromise on that 20% salary because she valued the time more than the cash. And yeah, she was in a privileged position that she could afford to do that. So I think if you can work out the facts of your situation first and then figure out, well, what would you like to be true in 12 months' time? And then you can start to think about, well, what are the actions that I can take now that get me closer and closer, accepting that no change happens really quickly. Interestingly, the most successful career change happens incrementally. You take incremental actions that get you closer to where you want to go. Okay. Often when people just leap, you know, sort of leap before looking, and you just sort of go, that's it, I've had enough. And we understand that we sometimes get to that point in our careers. That's less successful because we've not built the connections, we've not really explored, we've not had some of the conversations, and therefore you're less clear about whether your strengths are going to be a good fit. Is it going to be the right environment for you? And sometimes that means having to make a change again very quickly, which is really exhausting for people. Career changes is hard. And so I think if you can spend lots of time investing in those small actions, don't worry about that waiting time. Try and think of that waiting time as brilliant opportunity to kind of create the thing that you want to make happen, rather than getting frustrated about that waiting time, which at times it can obviously feel a bit frustrating, but try and see the upside of the wait rather than the downside.
And transparently for us in our business, because we did make quite a big career pivot and change, we ran a side project for several years. We kept that money in the business. That provided a runway. When we went from corporate life to our own business, I went first, so our business wasn't dependent on two salaries, to start accelerating it. And that got then the income for both of us. So it didn't happen quickly. No. And there was quite a lot. And we're not massive risk takers. That's also part of it. But I think you can give yourself more options. And particularly if someone might be listening to this and thinking, oh, I'd quite like a career choice that wasn't in corporate life, but that feels like quite a big leap, just know it might take longer, and maybe a side project that can, you know, create a bit of a fund that could support you moving on to what you want to do next. That's the model that we did, and that worked for us.
You've obviously had this remarkable perspective that you've changed so many people's lives, or had this sort of catalyst role to play. Obviously, you had a colossally successful TED Talk. You have a podcast that's had millions of listeners. What sort of feedback do you get either from viewers of that TED Talk or or listeners. What do people say to you?
Oh, I had the best one this week. I loved it. It's from somebody that works on a COVID ward in the NHS and feeling overwhelmed. She's a ward manager. And you get this in the podcast, you know, the reviews that people leave you, which is why people should leave reviews for Bruce, because it's an amazing way to get feedback for impact. And this person was a COVID ward manager, feeling really overwhelmed, had a obviously very hard 18 months. And she said that the podcast and our resources had helped her to get clarity and had helped her to support her team. And I think when people are so focused on their day-to-day job, particularly a job like that, which must be all-consuming in time and emotions, I think the fact that they can take a practical tool for us that can create clarity for themselves and help them to create clarity for other people that work for them, I mean, it's just the most, it's the most rewarding message that we could get to help one person help themselves and then to help other people through their job. The best, the best.
Yeah, I think the TED Talk, probably the thing I hear most often is, like, thank you for making me feel good about my career choices, which is interesting. So less about what are they going to go and do next, but more about they identify with, oh, I've had a squiggly career and I maybe felt bad about that. I felt that I'd not taken the traditional path and maybe that was the wrong thing to do. And maybe they felt a bit like a lone wolf until this moment in time. And they watch it and go, oh, that you've given me a way of describing perhaps what I was already doing and actually a way of feeling really confident about it. So much so that we've had people take our first book, Squiggly Career, which has a big squiggle on the front, into interviews, so that when they get asked questions about...
I thought you'd say into tattoo parlours.
No,
oh,
no,
not yet, not yet, Bruce.
That would be amazing. You can do that for us, Bruce. But they take it into interviews and kind of go, oh, you know, my CV might look less traditional. I've had what's called a squiggly career. I don't know if you've heard of it. And people advocating for squiggly careers in interviews. And I think, well, that's a brilliant way as well to get a feel for fit, because if you're someone who, like me, likes to squiggle in different directions and you're curious about lots of things and you talk about that in an interview, you want to be in an environment that encourages that and embraces that and makes that happen. And I think we work with such a
range. Best time to talk about it as well, isn't it, as well,
in
the interview.
Yeah, and if someone goes, no thank you, that's probably not the organisation you want to go and spend time in. And I am really reassured where, you know, we have lots of individuals give us feedback, but we also have organisations who watch that TED Talk and get in touch with us and say, what you have described is our ambition. So they might not be there today because that ladder has a really strong legacy that, you know, there's big global organisations are going to have to take a bit of time to figure out how to unwind some of that and what they might need to do differently. But they are clear about that is the direction they're heading. They want to help people to squiggle and stay. They want people to have careers as individual as they are. They recognise it's a big challenge, and we sometimes talk about the idea of, like, where are you on the squiggly scale? Of course, it's easier if you're starting from scratch because, you know, you can just design for squiggly. But most organisations are figuring out, well, how can we create an environment where people can have squiggly careers and have the sort of open conversations that you've described? So I love getting those messages as well from, I've had very big, very traditional companies get in touch with me, having watched TED Talk, and go, that sounds brilliant. We are really on board with that. That ambition, what we need a bit of help with is, like, how do we make that happen?
The first book was such a success. Penguin have come back and sort of asked you to do another book. And so obviously that's imminently arriving. I just wonder if you could explain to people what they'd expect to find in the new book.
So the new book's called You Coach You, and it's really a practical book, as you'd expect from us, to help people to help themselves. So I guess the squiggly career was quite proactive. It was recognising that I'm in a world of work that's changing and I need to invest in my skills. You Coach You is recognising that sometimes people get stuck and they need some help getting stuck, because we talk about these knotty moments where it feels like things might have gone a bit out of your control and you're trying to navigate your way through it. And You Coach You is a book which will give people the tools to help themselves get through those moments. And whether that's because they've got a challenge with how they're spending time, or they're feeling like they're not progressing in a way that's meaningful for them, or maybe like they're struggling with their self-belief, it is packed full of tools so that they can work their way through that challenge. And it's not to replace a career conversation with somebody else, or even if someone is fortunate enough to have a coach, which, you know, majority of people don't, but it's more that they are better prepared for those conversations because they don't happen often and you don't get a lot of time with those people. And when you're in those moments, you want to feel like you're getting the most out of them. And so it's a book that can either help yourself or help you to prepare for some of the conversations that you might be having with your career.
Yeah, I always think our books are books to do more than they are maybe books to read. And I don't think that they're probably not for everyone. And I think that's okay too. So I think the people who like our books the best are the people who have got a challenge or a conundrum or a question in the here and now that they need some support with. And you know, sometimes you just need someone to give you five questions to get you started. You just need a framework to work through. And we see, as with Squiggly, and I think you coach you even more so, our books get written in loads. They get the pages turned down, they get dropped in the bath. And that's when you think, oh, that's when I know we're doing a good job, because that's what we try to do. And you get organisations using them where, you know, they're using them for the peer-to-peer coaching conversations, and they'll go, well, we go to page 60 of the book and we'll borrow those 10 questions and then we'll write five of our own. So we've probably got even more. I think we've got more than 50 ideas for action and over 100 coach yourself questions in the book. So you have to work quite hard.
It's almost like when Amazon says people who bought this also bought this. It's almost, you can imagine it'll be a pack of felt tip pens.
Oh, yeah, it will be. It'll be highlighters or post-it notes. Yeah, we're not a passive read, I think it's fair to say. Yeah.
An activity book for a journey or plain journey.
Yeah.
If we get to do one of those. Fabulous. It's been such a wonderful discussion. And I think, you know, from my perspective, the reason why you've earned such a respect and love amongst so many listeners and so many readers is because the value you bring to their life. And actually, our jobs, we're almost reluctant to admit it sometimes, because it's like the serious part of us, or it's the part of us that feels less like a playful expression of who we want to be. But our jobs play such an important part in the dignity and the sense of pride we have about ourselves. And I think the reason why you've earned such love and respect from people is that you help them to navigate to a better place in that. So wonderful to chat to you. Wonderful to see how your success is developing. So thank you so much.
Thank you, Bruce. Always love talking to you.
Thank you, Helen and Sarah. Really delighted to have them on. And look, such a brilliant practical set of advice. Actually, you know, I scribbled down countless bits of their advice myself. That sort of job scanning idea is really interesting. Like I say, they've also had a massive TED Talk, and I've put the link to that in the show notes. So I think you'll get something from all of their discussions. Thank you so much for listening. I've been really grateful for the feedback I've got for the last few episodes. I'm very grateful for that. If you are interested in this and you want to get more information about how work's evolving or changing, feel free to sign up to the newsletter, and you'll see that linked to in the show notes. I've been Bruce Daidley. Thank you for listening. See you next time.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. Hello Fresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. Hello Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at hellofresh.com.
When it comes to your finances, you think you've done it all. You've saved, you've researched, and you've invested all that you can. Now it's time to take those investments to the next level by using the brand behind every great investor, Yahoo Finance. As America's number one finance destination, Yahoo Finance has everything you need, whether you're a seasoned trader or just dipping your toes into the market. Join the millions of investors who trust Yahoo Finance to guide them on their financial journey. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit yahoofinance.com. The number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.